All right, this is the Rebel Room on LasVegasSun.com. I'm Ray Brewer, along with Mike Grimala, talking everything UNLV athletics. Basketball, the last time we recorded this show, Mike, were second place in the Mountain West. We were raving about how good they are, and then the second you speak, we speak. I don't want to blame you exclusively, but goes slightly south. They do salvage a dub at the buzzer, courtesy of Marvin Coleman against Fresno State. But they kind of came back to life a little bit from the last time we did this show.
What do you want to focus on? The four-game losing streak that brought them back to earth, where they played the top teams in the conference? Or do you want to focus on the shot and Magic Marvin Coleman winning that game?
Miracle Marvin Coleman.
Okay, yeah, let's focus on that.
He hadn't made a field goal until that shot against Fresno, right?
Correct.
Listen, anytime you win, it's a good win. I don't care if the team you're playing has a losing record or if it's at your home arena and you should have won by more. Any win is a good win. I'm a firm believer of that in any sport. But the four-game losing streak, especially the loss at Colorado State, was a little disturbing. Colorado State, a team that is what, middle to bottom of the pack?
It's hard to tell because they're really hot right now. They're playing like one of the top three or four teams in the conference. And when they're making shots, they're really hard to beat. Like they did against UNLV, they made shots and they eventually pulled away. So I put them in that second or third tier. Not like a true contender, but They were just really, really hot when UNLV played them.
Yeah, put up 96, I think, against the Rebels. And, that loss on paper, at least, doesn't look great. Colorado State, as you said, got hot. Their shooting percentage was off the charts. The one play for me that kind of stood out was in the loss against Utah State in Utah. Tough place to play, right? Arguably the toughest place to play in the league, I guess, behind San Diego State. And UNLV's hitting some shots early. They're up at halftime. They're matching them blow for blow. It's a good game. You're feeling good about yourself. So Utah State starts pulling away a little bit. And UNLV, Mike, is within like five, I say, with 2 minutes to play. Right? Hardy dribbles the ball up the court. Do you remember this play?
Tell me what happens.
Dribbles the ball up the court. Crosses the midline. Looks back and slings it to Coleman, who hadn't got across the thing yet.
Yeah.
And then the team, because you're there at the game, I'm watching at home in Henderson. Then they pan over to TJ, and TJ's just got this look in his face like, I cannot believe I just saw that play.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like, okay, that's was not a smart basketball play.
The game, I'm going to contradict your memory somewhat. I don't think they were that close when the game happened. I don't think they were within five. I think that the game was more over by that point.
Okay.
But that play was still, it stood out as a bad play. I think they also had a cross-court pass that was picked off for an easy layup the other way. That's not good. It was sort of, they knew that four-game stretch was going to be tough. And there were a couple games where I would have liked to have seen more fight from them. Colorado State, more fight. The Nevada game, I would have liked to have seen more fight up there. Utah State also. Like, those are games where they, were close for a little while, close at the half in all three of them. And then the second half, they just got their doors blown off in the second half. So that makes me question, how good really is this team? You see them compete for a half, so you think maybe they're comparable to these teams in the middle of the Mountain West. And then the second half comes around, and you look up, and they're down by 15 by the end of the game. So it makes it hard to really judge where this UNLV team is. Even though we've only got, six games left on the schedule, I'm still not quite sure how they stack up with the rest of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that the league tournament still is at the Thomas and Mack Center. And, San Diego State, obviously a juggernaut, even though UNLV hung with them here for a little bit. But other than that, any other game in the tournament on your home court, you're going to have a fighting chance.
Is that honestly better than you expected, or what you expected this year? I'll say, for me, I did not. If you told me going into the conference tournament this year, T.J. Otzelberger's first year, that you'd feel good about your chances against anyone except the number one seed, I would have said that's pretty good. Like, hey, at least you're getting something. There's a reason to watch this team this year, all the way to the end of the year. Like, there's a reason to tune in. Like, something could happen. There could be a miracle. You could get a good draw or get hot and end up playing, you know, with a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. So for me, that's pretty good. I don't. How do you feel about that?
Okay, so I've used this analogy with Case, and he didn't get it. And you might, because you're a little older than he is. Do you remember Dr. Seaver?
From Growing Pains?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let me, you be Dr. Seaver, and I'll be Ray Brewer.
Okay.
So the reason I think that the Rebels always have a fighting chance in the league tournament at the Thomas and Mack Center is because my first senior year at UNLV in 98 was when they won the 16-team WAC tournament. They beat, like, Hawaii. They beat Utah with Rick Majerus the year Utah went to the national finals. They beat Fresno State, coached by Tark. And it was just like every game, the arena started getting louder and louder and louder. And, of course, they're, what, 7 or 8 years removed from a Final Four. So there were still people in town that had that, you know, this is our team running Rebels. And they stormed the court. And it was just this great – it was like overtime win against Hawaii, beat somebody else, beat Utah, beat Fresno in the tournament. They end up losing to Princeton. It was like 98, give or take. And then – Kentucky beat Utah in the national championship. And then my other senior year, 99, it was like, okay, we're going to be at the tournament every day. It's going to be awesome. And they end up losing to SMU or Tulsa or somebody in the first game. Next year, they go to the Mountain West. First year in the Mountain West. A new league, no automatic bid. UNLV won the league outright, regular season, their only regular season win. And then magic happened, like Mark Dickel, Tyrone Nesby, and they end up winning the Mountain West tournament on the home court. So it's like 2 and 3 years, right? And then you get to the Kruger years, and they're winning the tournament at home. And that's when other teams in the league were like, hey, we got to get this out of Vegas, man. This is unfair for the other teams. UNLV's got such an advantage at home. They moved it to Denver, if you remember, for a few years.
I do remember that.
And UNLV made it to the finals 1 year with Jay Spoonhauer. And now it's back at home. And because of this, Dr. Seaver, I always think that the Rebels have a chance to win the league tournament at home. Now, truth be told, in the last 8 years, give or take, UNLV has not had a home court edge in many of the games in the tournament, right? New Mexico's always has more fans, right? San Diego State fans travel down for the semifinal and final rounds. There's more fans of opposing teams there, and there's no home court edge. But still, I think in my heart of hearts, and I think in a lot of the fans' heart and hearts, once you get to the Thomas and Mack and you just need to win 3 and 3, anything can happen.
So let me ask you, that scenario that you just mentioned, you know, UNLV gets to the Mountain West tournament, they win a game, they get to the weekend, or they get to the semifinals. Does this building start filling up? Do people jump on the bandwagon that quick? And do you think this team is capable of doing something like that? Like, after you've seen them now for, what are they, 7 and 5 in Mountain West play? So you've seen them for 12. They've played 2/3 of the Mountain West schedule. From what you know about this team, can they make that kind of run?
I think they can. I think they could get to the semifinals. I really do, because again, it just, if you got to take it game by game, and the way UNLV is set up and the way UNLV plays, if they get hot, same thing with any team, I guess, but if they start making a few shots, they're tough to beat. And you saw a few games at the beginning of the year when, you know, Antonio, who can't even get on the floor, made a few threes. Hardy's playing better. And you're like, okay, we could see how this is kind of piecing together. Now, Hardy can't make a shot to save his life. You know, the guy who's going to be your point guard is now the backup to a former walk-on who all of a sudden goes for a triple-double and now can't do anything. But if everything clicks, if you peak at the right time, which is the whole goal of basketball, right? Get to March healthy, playing your best, and see if you could string together a few wins and keep playing. They could get to a semifinal round on, was it, it'd be Friday?
Yeah, I'd have to look. I think it's Friday, and then Saturday is the final.
But the bottom line is that nobody's beaten San Diego State. right? San Diego State's undefeated. Even when they don't play well, they find ways to win and win kind of convincingly. I really don't think UNLV beats Utah State either. I think when they beat them January 1st, it was a little bit of a fluke. And, you know, obviously playing Reno, not Nevada, as you said earlier in the show. I mean, they're closer to Reno this year than last year, but I still think Reno's probably a little better than them.
The defense is just concerning to me. The way they've just fallen off the map defensively. They can't seem to get a stop against anyone. Like, even Fresno State, once they heated up, was just scoring possession after possession after possession in the second half.
It's perimeter defense, too. I think on the inside, when DeJong's not in foul trouble, they're okay. You know, Blair is more than serviceable defensively. And DeJong, I think, is elite defensively. In my opinion, you may disagree.
I agree with you on Jong. I think he's very good. I disagree with you on Blair. I don't think he's that good defensively.
Okay. I'm okay with that. But to be that bad on the perimeter, and I go back to the Colorado State game, which is a game I'm a very intimate with because I followed it the whole time. But Colorado State couldn't miss. Now, you could say, well, Ray, they're a streaky team. They got hot. Or you got to get a hand up. Yeah. I mean, you got to do something to break. I mean, you can't give up 98 points in that altitude. It's tough to get up and down the court that much.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. UNLV, their offense has gotten better over the course of the season, so much better. They're pretty good on offense now. You know, in terms of the landscape of college basketball, last time I checked, they were number 65 or 66 in offensive efficiency. So, I mean, by technical standards, like, they're NCAA tournament caliber on offense if you're one of the top 68 teams in the country. So, I mean, their offense is pretty good. But the defense is just, I don't know if they have enough to make a sustained. If you have to win four games in 4 days and your defense is this bad, one of those games is going to, you know, the opponent, they're not going to have, you know, four different opponents are not going to have four off shooting days against you all in a row. Like, at some point, one of those teams is going to play to their capability or even have a good shooting day, and UNLV, I don't think, can survive that. So I'm not holding out that they're going to make some miracle run in the NCAA into the Mountain West tournament.
I think the problem is that they gave us a little hope.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, we expected them to be a team in transition, right? David Jenkins, who's all world, wasn't going to be eligible to play as he sat out on a transfer. New coach, new system, brought in the Scheibels of the world as one-year placeholders. And really, none of those three transfers have worked out, right? You get a guy from Arizona State who, I mean, to his credit, though, we did win the game against Fresno. He hit those threes, right? You get a guy from Utah, Tillman, hasn't been great, and he hasn't been the best citizen. And then you get a guy from Texas who was hurt. So your placeholders really didn't work out that well, and that's kind of where we're at. Reno on Wednesday, big spot at home.
If they win that game, is that enough for you to get to like tide you over to the Mountain West tournament? If they win that game, there's not, and then you look at what's left in the schedule. You go to San Diego State, you're probably going to lose that game. You get Colorado State here. You go to San Jose. You go to New Mexico. But like this Reno game, if you win that game, you kind of gloss over the next five games, right?
I mean,
that would be the most important thing that could happen over the next five. It would at least give you a good feeling and keep you engaged until the Mountain West tournament.
I mean, I think the awful part of it is there isn't a player on the roster who you're like, oh, well, got to develop this guy. You know, these next five games are crucial for development.
Not Bryce Hamilton?
Well, okay, Bryce Hamilton, yeah. I mean, you just, you know, you want to see how it's going to look and feel next year. And, I mean, DeJong will be at center. Hamilton and Jenkins, sign me up for that look.
That's a pretty good team. Like, I expect them next year, when we're at this time of year next year, we'll be talking about seeding in the NCAA tournament. Like,
no way.
Where you don't think that team will be relevant on Selection Sunday?
I've had my heart broken so many times.
But don't,
I mean,
let that,
I thought the year Dave Rice got fired, they were going to make a run. I really did. I mean, I thought he finally had his point guard in Sears that he was desperately missing. I thought he had overvalued like Cody Doolin.
Thought Zimmerman was going to be the next, the real,
you know,
deal.
And
they looked good for that.
Had a ton of talent with McCaw and Jones, who never really got cleared. They brought the transfer in, the dunker,
Aiguamu.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm thinking all systems are a go, and then, you know, they got this really tough non-league schedule, but they beat Oregon at the MGM Grand Garden. They win a few games in Hawaii, and then an injury. Zimmerman can't get a rebound, another injury. Next thing you know, we're bringing a valet in from the Venetian to play center.
Well, the difference is that year you were relying on, you know, Steven Zimmerman and Rashad Vaughn and like a bunch of, you know, freshmen to carry you. Next year is not going to – next year you've got David Jenkins, who's a fourth-year junior, Mbaka Jung, who will be a senior, Bryce Hamilton, who will be a junior. That's your core. And those guys are all veterans.
Still no proven point guard.
Well, you've got Marvin Coleman and whoever you bring in the recruiting class. They've got a bunch of guards.
We don't even talk about Hardy. It's like he's not even on the team.
We'll have to see if he comes back next year or if he, you know, decides to transfer, what he's going to do. If he does come back, you know, that's another key piece for them. But to me, that's a team that should be in the mix in the Mountain West. Like, that team should win the Mountain West title or be right up there, one or two.
Yeah, but a basketball team's all about, I mean, yeah, they got three good pieces. You know, they got Chris Bosh, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade. But who are your other six guys?
If we get to mid-February next year and we don't think there's a reason to watch Selection Sunday, that's a big, big disappointment for UNLV. They've got to be in it to the end, yeah, to the end of the year.
I mean, Selection Sunday is kind of a wash now anyways because all these predictions are so spot.
That's true, but there is still – UNLV's got to either be in the – it'd be like right up there to win the Mountain West regular season, be a real threat to win the tournament – and have a good enough resume to be, like, talked about. You've got to be on the bubble. Give me a bubble season at least next year. That's what they've got to do.
All right. Briefly, football had its signing day last week, and all systems a go for Marcus Arroyo in his first recruiting efforts. 30 days, 28 players in 30 days. The class was ranked second by 24/7 Sports. At least 23 players – Grimala, three stars or better, a program record. Some highlights, Justin Rogers, a quarterback, transfers in from TCU. 2 years ago, he was the nation's number two rated dual threat quarterback by ESPN, had a really ugly knee injury, never got on the field at TCU. He's healthy. He's on the UNLV roster. They're waiting a word from the NCAA if he'll be eligible in 20. But he adds to the quarterback room, which is actually getting pretty overfull.
Same question. Is this a bowl team next year?
I mean,
you take a team that was not – they were not good, but they weren't horrible. Like, this wasn't like one of those old 1-11 or 2-10 UNLV teams that was just awful. They were – what were they, 4-8? They beat Reno. They were close in a couple. Like, this team was competent at least. Like, they weren't terrible. You're not starting from scratch here. You're adding the number two recruiting class in the Mountain West. You know, number 70, whatever in the country.
Yeah, but how many of those guys are going to fit in and play right away? I know you got some JUCO guys. You still got to develop players no matter how you slice and dice it. And even though they got some guys like LaShawn Bell from Calabasas, a linebacker from Cali who probably could play right away. He was kind of like, you know, the most sought after guy that they went after. And of course you've got another linebacker whose name escapes me right now, but I'm looking for it. Brennan Scott from Texas, another freshman. They're still freshmen. I mean, how are they going to acclimate? Well, I know UNLV needs linebackers.
Well, the thing is, you're not going – when I say that, can they be in a bowl game? You're not going from 1-6. You're going from 4-6.
Yeah, but you're also replacing your non-league games with games against ASU and Cal.
But you lost those games anyways to the bad teams that you had on the non-conference last year. So you're not losing much in that regard. And the way I'm looking at it,
who's the cream puff next year? Is it Southern Utah?
I would have to look at the
because I know they open with Cal.
My point is if Arroyo is an upgrade over Tony Sanchez, which by all accounts he should be, like that's the reason you change coaches is to try and get a better coach, and then you add one of the best recruiting classes in the conference to a team that was somewhat close to a bowl status and competitive the last couple of years, 5 wins and 4 wins. It shouldn't take that much to get you over the hump if you've got a better coach and better players. I mean, a lot of those better players are freshmen.
They're playing Cal at home, first game at Allegiant Stadium. Next week, Louisiana Tech. Next week, Arizona State. Three games at home to open the season. How often do you see that?
Well,
best case scenario, you're 2-1 out of that. I mean, Arizona State and Cal aren't elite level Pac-12 teams, but it's still Pac-12 talent.
Last year they were 2-2 in non-conference, so it's not like they destroyed a bunch of cupcakes and got to 4-0. They were 2-2. They beat Southern Utah and they beat Vanderbilt.
Okay, at Boise, there was no way you're winning that to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm.
At Hawaii, that's a win. Hawaii's massively down. They had the worst recruiting class.
Lost their coach.
And at San Diego State. See how the new coach is over there, but probably a loss. At San Jose, needs to be a dub. CSU here has to be a dub. Fresno here, coin flip. Wyoming here has to be a dub. UNR here has to be a dub. So if they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they got a chance. They should.
Like I said, it's not an awful zero win team that the coach is taking over. He's taking over a 4-win team with enough players coming back and adding a good enough recruiting class that they should be able to juice this for 2 extra wins. You're not asking the world of this coach to win 2 more games than the previous year. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Gramala, the one thing, though, with UNLV football is if you haven't learned anything over the last whatever years you've been here, you think they're going to win a game and they don't win it.
It's going to go wrong.
They're supposed to beat Howard by 40 points. They lose straight up. They're supposed to get killed at Vandy. They win straight up. They're supposed to lose at Fresno. They win straight up. They're supposed to beat Southern Utah and NAU with Bobby Houck. They lose. UNLV football, you cannot predict. You don't know how. Listen, Marcus Arroyo, great coach, should be an upgrade. Right, you just said they hired you to be an upgrade. How's he going to handle calling his own plays and, you know, managing a game?
Should be better than 4 wins.
Who's going to be the quarterback? Oblad?
They won 4 games with these quarterbacks last year.
I'm just saying he's got 7 quarterbacks now.
And
did you bring the kid in from TCU to hold Rodgers' clipboard?
All I'm saying is they're not going to be worse at quarterback than they were last year. They're not going to be worse on the offensive line. They're not going to be worse.
They might be worse on the offensive line.
They're not going to be worse at running back.
They lose Justin Polo.
They're not going to be worse at receiver. Like these are this team is not the cupboard is not completely bare. It's not stocked. It's the cupboard is full of 4-win players that got you to 4 wins. But it's not a monumental leap to think that this team should get 6 wins next year. I think if you set your sights lower than a bowl game next year, that is underselling Arroyo. Like the reason you
picked them to reach a bowl in 12 of the last 13 years, and I'm 0 for 12.
All I'm saying is, in terms of holding the program accountable, if you fired Tony Sanchez because he underperformed by not making a bowl game, your view as the athletic department was that you should have made a bowl game, and you didn't, so Tony Sanchez is out. You bring back that same team. They should make a bowl game next year. If Arroyo underperforms that, then that's on him. Like he's got to make a bowl game, or else you kind of start thinking about that hire and wondering, you know, is he the guy?
Yeah, but throughout the history of this program, son,
you
get 4 years, we bring in the next guy. The only difference with Arroyo is three things. One is he's recruiting to the facility and stadium, which nobody had before. Two, he's making $1.5 million, which is top three in the league. Never happened before.
And if you're giving him all that and he comes in and wins 4 games, the same as Sanchez did last year, that is a colossal disappointment. Even in year one. Like, they should be be better.
Gramala, this guy is a first-time head coach.
So was Sanchez, and he ended up winning 4 games with this team.
Isn't Urban Meyer. He's not going to come in right away and have UNLV win in 10 games.
I feel like you're setting your sights, the expectations, really low when they should not be. Like, the reason you hired him is because you think he's going to be a better coach.
Okay, well, you want my expectations to be high? First game at the new stadium, everybody shows up because it's the new stadium and the tickets are cheaper. Magical night, they beat Cal, right?
Yeah.
Next game, Louisiana Tech here, destroy them. Next game, Arizona State. You're 2-0. You feel good about yourself. Marvin Lewis is their DC. The Bengals suck. We got the best OC in America and Arroyo. We're 3-0 now. Getting top 25 votes.
I think you're going right? too far in the other direction right now.
Okay.
If you're being facetious. I'm just saying, Tony Sanchez got this team to 4 wins last year. It's pretty much the same team plus a good recruiting class. Why can't Arroyo give you more than 4 wins next year?
All right. Well, for Mike, I'm Ray. Thanks for listening to the Rebel Room. LaShawn Bell appreciates it.
So Brennan does Scott.
Brennan Scott. Those two linebackers for studs. the next 3 years before they go to the league are going to be really good.
They could be the next Vic Veramontes.
Exactly.
Rebel Room.